You may be seated. Welcome to the Second Court of Appeals. This is our second case for the morning. And we do have two oral arguments at 10:30, but we're going to take a short break in between in case there's anybody in here for the 10:30 cases. But we just have this one for right now, so if the clerk will call the case. Let me introduce the panel for this one. To my left is visiting Judge Michael Massengale. We're thrilled to have him up from Houston. To my right is Judge Wade Birdwell, and I am Elizabeth Kerr. So welcome to everybody.
The court will now call its Part A, R.S., and may it please the court, Mr. Manny Bailey to argue for the appellant, and Ms. Victoria Ford to argue for the appellant.
Thank you. Counsel, when you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the court. The sole issue in this case on appeal is whether Texas Government Code 411.0736A1 allows for the non-disclosure of DWI convictions originally filed as a Class A misdemeanor due to the blood alcohol content alleged to be a 0.15 or higher, but subsequently convicted as a Class B misdemeanor.
Let me stop you there and ask you whether that's really the sole issue in light of the argument that the state's made that there's been a finding that giving the relief that was requested would not be in the interest of justice.
Yes, Your Honor. We do intend to address that. The second point that was raised by the state in its brief regarding that the finding is not in the interest of justice is based on the single last line of the trial court's finding, and that basis is cited almost entirely and relied upon the primary point here, which is whether or not the blood alcohol content and the case originally being filed as a Class A misdemeanor instead of the subsequent conviction of a Class B relates to that.
Okay, well, I'm not trying to prevent you from making that argument, but it seems to me that the statute requires a determination that granting this relief would be in the interest of justice, that is part of what's required to get there. And so, you know, it seems to me that even if I'm sympathetic to your argument about the interpretation of the statute and your client's eligibility for this relief, in the absence of a finding that it would be in the interest of justice for him to get it, it seems to me that, you know, even if I agreed with you on the rest, you've still got a problem getting the relief you're seeking.
Yes, Your Honor. The statement that it would not be in the best interest of justice to grant this in the trial court's decision was the last single bulleted line, I believe, in its findings. It appears to me, as I read the trial court's decision, that was the line used to say it was being denied based entirely on the analysis that's brought up earlier. Unfortunately, this hearing was done informally in judges' chambers regarding whether or not this order was going to be granted. The primary point that was argued, and it was specified by the trial court judge, was whether or not the original filing as a Class A misdemeanor would be an issue, would disqualify them, even though the subsequent conviction was a Class B.
Okay, well, do you disagree with my reading of subsection D of the statute that identifies as part of what's required? It says a determination that the person is entitled to file the petition. That's what's implicated by the thrust of your argument, whether he's entitled to file this petition, and issuance of an order of non-disclosure of criminal history record information is in the best interest of justice. So do you disagree with my reading that is a distinct legal element that's required? You have to obtain from the trial court a determination that issuance of this order would be in the best interest of justice.
I do not disagree with that interpretation, Your Honor. However, I do believe that, as the trial court in this case put it, based on the analysis that's given, is entirely the fact that this was originally filed with an alleged blood alcohol content of greater than 0.15. That seems to be the basis for the determination of whether this is in the interest of justice.
Well, whether or not he, I'm, Whether or not the trial judge was correct in his interpretation of the statute, wouldn't all of those considerations be permissible considerations with respect to whether it would be in the best interest of justice? I mean, to issue this order? I mean, the fact that there was evidence of a blood alcohol content of over 0.015?
It could be, Your Honor. Unfortunately, the findings of fact and conclusions of law in this case do not elaborate at all on that last single line. And the basis of this decision was written. The findings of fact and conclusions of law that includes that line were originally as offered by the state in the after it was requested by the appellant at the time the attorney for the defense. And without further elaboration in the actual ruling, I think it would be, or findings, I believe it's based, again, entirely on the first aspect that we're arguing here, and that is unfortunately not kept in the record because it was an informal hearing, but I believe that's what was essentially stated in the trial court's opinion during the informal hearing that was had before the decision was made in this case.
There's no reference to any evidence being heard by the court informally in the state's brief. Is there everything that is in the state's brief with regard to evidence references are to the record, the clerk's record? Is that not so?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. Can you repeat the question?
In other words, the hearing that was done informally, there's nothing in the state's brief that indicates there was any evidence heard by the trial court in that informal hearing other than what was already present in the clerk's record?
None that I'm aware of, Your Honor, no.
Okay. The order also appears to indicate that the court makes a finding that it is without subject matter jurisdiction to hear the petition because it finds that subsection D applies, the punishable interpretation applies. So in what manner would the court be able to reach a best interest finding on the petition if it makes a finding that there's no subject matter jurisdiction for it to make a finding?
I don't believe there would be, Your Honor. I agree with that interpretation. And that is why we have the issue here. I'm also aware that there's been previous case law from the Supreme Court of Texas that has poured out previous appeals of petitions for non-disclosure based on there being statutory damage issues, but this is not an issue of civil damages. This is instead an issue in which a trial court had made a decision based on statutory construction, which is why we require the interpretation and aid of an appellate court to help us reach a decision on how this statute should be interpreted in its application for future petitions for orders for non-disclosure.
Let me shift gears just for a second to that, to parsing the statute that we're called upon to interpret here. It seems to me that if your position were to be adopted, that really what the statute should have said was following a conviction of an offense under 49.04 other than a conviction under subsection D. I mean, that would be the clearest way for the legislature to have expressed what you're urging on us, wouldn't it?
Yes, ma'am, that would have been clearer. I'm sorry.
Well, but the fact that they didn't phrase it that way and put it in terms of an offense punishable, which might suggest that a subsection D conviction wasn't necessary, but just underlying facts where he could have been convicted under subsection D is enough to preclude him from being able to get the relief you seek.
Well, that is certainly the position that is taken by the state, but when using the cardinal rule of statutory construction, which is to implement the will of the legislature, we construe the language with the literal text, but we read it in context. And that's the point that I think is more cogent here. That's the Supreme Court's decision in Baird v. State that I was quoting there. Context is what is important in this case. Now, the state argues that because the word punishable is used, Their interpretation of that means giving rise to a specified punishment, according to Black's Law Dictionary. And because the statute states that convictions under 4904, other than those punishable under subsection D of the same statute, are what we apply this here, we still have to go and read the entirety of subsection D as well. Now, that statute specifically states in relevant part that while 4904.04 relates to driving while intoxicated, subsection D specifically states that if it is shown on the trial of an offense under this section that the analysis of a specimen of the person's blood, breath, or urine showed an alcohol concentration level of 0.15 or more at the time of the analysis, then this is an offense that is a Class A misdemeanor. I think it's important to look at the fact that it has to be shown at trial or otherwise proven beyond a reasonable doubt that the blood alcohol content was a 0.15 or higher under that subsection.
Well, wasn't there, and I don't have it in front of me, I apologize, but there was something signed by trial counsel, was there not, that made reference to 0.16 blood alcohol content?
Yes, Your Honor. Well, it is the standard practice in Tarrant County when a plea is done for a misdemeanor DWI that the blood alcohol content that is alleged by the state, as alleged by the state, is included in the on the face of the plea paperwork. However, in this case, there was never any part where it was specified that enhancement, the 0.15 section, was pled true to. In that same plea paperwork, on its face, we see that this person has been charged with and is pleading guilty to a Class B misdemeanor of driving while intoxicated. There is a written-in section that says 0.16. I would also point out to the court that it has no margin of error. That is not also the standard practice of the DA to put that there. Margin of errors can be large, and in a case where it's that close, could very well have been below 0.15.
Does it matter that the trial court ordered the interlock device to be placed on the car?
I don't believe it does, Your Honor. I was planning on getting to that. The trial court is obligated for as a probation for a Class A misdemeanor, which is either a repetition or a DWI in which a 0.15 or higher BAC exists. Probation includes alcohol monitoring devices, usually interlock devices, ignition interlock devices on a vehicle. However, trial courts have the absolute discretion to make that a condition of a Class B DWI probation, which is exactly what happened here. The brief for the state does mention and point to the fact that the conditions of probation state or cite the information, the charging information in this case, which, as originally cited, does say that this is alleging a blood alcohol content of above a 0.15. However, that citation to the original charging information appears to be standard practice. I don't believe they would alter that section as well as change the information when a case is pled down, but also does not change the fact that the plea and the conviction were for a Class B DWI for a first offense without a blood alcohol content of greater than 0.15, which I believe goes back to our contextual reading of the entirety of subsection D, which says that it has to be proven or shown at trial that the blood alcohol content was greater than 0.15. This also goes to the state's interpretation, possibly leading to overly burdensome or absurd results, as if their interpretation is applied here. If it's argued that if it's determined that you have to be able to prove that the blood alcohol content was not above a 0.15 or higher in order to be eligible for these non-disclosures, that would mean that there would have to be extra work done on a case where, for instance, the motion to suppress got a blood evidence thrown out. It was determined that it was applied to the wrong person, part of simple plea negotiation. All of this would have to be done on a record and a specific record created for all of this versus the standard application where this could be brought up and it could easily be part of plea negotiation. We don't have a record for that in this kind of case, but these can be the results, and it would mean that every time we have any kind of reduction, we would have to create a record and make sure there would be solid evidence to look at in order to apply this, which cuts against the legislative history, which we believe supports us, our position. This was determined to be part of the second chance statutes. If you look to Sophrenia Thompson, who wrote the authorship and sponsorship notes on this particular bill, and as cited by the state in their brief, The purpose of this statute is to provide people that have first-time, low-level misdemeanor convictions a chance to have them sealed from their public record in order to increase their, to help their lives. The specific language used in the authorship and sponsorship section by Ms. Thompson states that this is for low-level convictions. Low-level convictions is the term that's used repeatedly. I stress convictions when we're looking at that because, again, this is a conviction of a Class B misdemeanor, the lowest possible level, which why I believe it also supports the appellant's argument here that a conviction under a Class B is what we're concerned with. The word punishable is troubling, but when you look at the entire context, to be punishable under subsection D, we have to be able to prove, either at trial or pled to, a blood alcohol content of 0.15 or higher. Relying on the original charging information without other proof of that, I believe, is in violation of the statute. And it supposes and creates extra work to look at this retroactively and state that.
If we reach the issue of best interest, I'm not aware that we got any authority. Has any other court addressed what that type of evidence would be?
My apologies, Your Honor. I'm out of time.
May I? You may answer the question, but is there any authority that indicates to us what type of evidence would be something we would be looking for to determine best evidence?
None that I'm...
And whether or not in this context, if the state has agreed to a plea of a misdemeanor B, that they can then use the evidence that would have supported a misdemeanor A to negate the basis of the statute with regard to the conviction. Any indication in the authority?
None that I'm aware of, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you, Counsel.
May it please the court. Counsel, my name is Victoria Ford and I represent the state in this case. The state asked this court to affirm the trial court's order denying appellant's petition for non-disclosure because he was not entitled to an order of non-disclosure based on his blood alcohol concentration at the time of his DWI offense and because non-disclosure is not in the best interest of justice in this case. The focus of this case is one of statutory interpretation. This court should affirm the trial court's statutory interpretation of the non-disclosure statute in its order denying appellant's petition for non-disclosure for two reasons. First, the plain language of the non-disclosure statute makes clear that individuals with a BAC of 0.15 or higher are not entitled to orders of non-disclosure, and appellant's BAC was 0.16 at the time it was tested for his DWI.
What about the idea that blood alcohol content has to be proved?
Yes, Your Honor, and unfortunately the record for the court is skim in this case. However, the appellant in this case did sign an acknowledgement during his plea process. He was admonished by the judge. He signed the plea admonishment form that did indicate the 0.16 blood alcohol concentration. He didn't contest that.
Are you telling us something that's in the record or something that's not in the record?
It is in the record on page, clerk's record, page 15, is the plea admonishment form in which the appellant's signature is present, his trial counsel's signature is present as well, and the state's prosecuting attorney's signature is present, that he acknowledged that the blood alcohol content was 0.16.
Wait. Okay, so I'm looking at page 15, and it doesn't look like what you're describing.
I'm sorry.
Maybe page 13?
Page 13, okay. Excuse me, I'm sorry. Mr. Bagley did say, you know, we don't know the circumstances of this plea and what exactly happened there. We do have appellant's signature on this document stating the BAC was 0.16.
So is it the state's position that signature, in connection with the plea agreement, is tantamount to showing on the trial of an offense that the alcohol concentration level exceeded 0.15?
It's what we have in this case, Your Honor. And the trial court during the non-disclosure proceedings in his findings did find that the appellant's blood alcohol was 0.16, that it was not contested during the non-disclosure.
But doesn't the phrase, if it is shown on the trial, suggest that there's some sort of evidence put on?
Evidence or, again, in a plea, that evidence would, in the best of circumstances, there would be the evidence presented at that time. However, the state, again, in the response to the appellant's petition for non-disclosure, did present the blood alcohol results of this, and they were not contested at that time either. So it was shown to the court that the blood alcohol was 0.16. Again, it was not contested at the trial at the time back in 2013, and it was shown to the court in the state's response to the petition for non-disclosure, and that was not argued or contested during the non-disclosure proceedings.
Just so that I understand exactly what you're arguing, is it your argument that this plea documentation that's in the record constitutes some sort of admission or confession that the blood alcohol content was 0.016, or are you simply drawing on everything that's in the record?
It is our argument that that signature acknowledging the 0.16, or yes, 0.16, is an admission to that 0.16 blood alcohol concentration at the time.
Okay, so since that is your argument, why is that your argument? Because I don't see any language here that suggests that in pleading that. That the defendant was admitting specific allegations that had been made by the state to include anything that was listed on this form.
Our argument, while that is our argument, the argument supporting it does include the rest of the record in which the blood results were presented to the trial court during the non-disclosure proceedings, and again, they were not contested at that time. So because they were not contested at the later date, we can extrapolate that was an admission at the time. He's never contested those, even in the brief to this court.
Well, so I'm just trying to think through the public policy implications of this. So is it the state's position that if somebody blows a BAC of 0.16, but then they're offered a plea deal to a Class B misdemeanor, that they're going to have to jump through the hoops of having to disprove, you know, challenge the test, bring in an expert, incur all that expense in order to ever have a hope of satisfying the statute?
Well, I think that looking at the public policy, what we would hope is during the plea proceedings, it would be a little bit more clear than maybe in this case, whereas during the plea proceedings, either, I know appellant brought up in his brief that the blood results were subject to a motion to suppress or things like that. So it may cause a little bit more work on the front end to make it clear during pleas and things like that what the blood alcohol was, or if the state is not intending to rely on that blood alcohol, even if they had a test, to not include it in the plea paperwork. But what we have here, it was included and has not been contested since that.
Could the state have just left that blank?
It could have. Yes.
Counsel, what's the title for the statute that we're looking at? Specifically says it's a procedure for convictions and certain driving while intoxicated convictions. Isn't what's being requested by this order, seeking this order, is a order sealing the conviction? And this is not a conviction for a Class A misdemeanor. It is a conviction for a Class B misdemeanor.
Yes, that is actually something that I did want to point out. Appellant has cited to Texas Government Code Section 411.0736, which is that sealant non-disclosures for convictions. However, the trial court's order in this case was, and what the petition was filed under, was Texas Government Code Section 411.0731, which is non-disclosure orders for community supervision, which is what appellant was placed on. His sentence was community supervision, so that is the applicable statute that we're looking at. The wording and application is entirely the same between those two sections.
Does the wording of that particular section use the word conviction?
Yes.
And then qualify the word conviction with the nature of the offense for which the conviction was imposed?
Yes, yes. The statement is...
So the language punishable actually qualifies the word offense, which in turn qualifies the word conviction?
Yes. Yes, Your Honor. It's following the conviction of an offense under Section 4904 Penal Code, other than an offense punishable under subsection D. And as Justice Kerr pointed out, very easy way that the legislature could have made this statute if they truly intended to exclude only Class A convictions, Class A misdemeanor convictions under the statute, would be to simply say convictions under Section 4904 except convictions under Section D of that subsection. However, they didn't. They chose to use the words punishable under. And in engaging in statutory construction, courts are to assume that every word...
But punishable under qualifies other than an offense, and other than offense qualifies convicted of an offense. So why should they have to specifically say convictions when they are clearly qualifying the word conviction in the statute itself? It seems to me that you're putting the history that's to be sealed, including the evidence, ahead of what's actually supposed to be sealed, which is the conviction and then all the history associated with that conviction.
Well, I would say that the legislative intent supports the construction that we put forward in our brief, that it would be punishable as separate than that conviction.
So the DA gets to make a plea deal by which the defendant gets to plea to a Class B. Part of that, based upon counsel's interpretation, is that, hey, I can get this sealed, and that's part of what I'm dealing for. And then after the fact, because there's a .16 in there somewhere, you get to say, well, yeah, we agreed to the conviction, but punishable means we get to go talk about how bad he was with regard to what he actually did. And so that's what this sounds like, counsel.
And I agree. However, that is based on the legislative intent, seems to be what the legislator intended to do. And as counsel said, the cardinal rule of interpretation is to determine the will of the legislature. And both the House and the Senate, in enacting this statute, stated that it is intended for DWIs with a BAC below 0.15. The Senate Criminal Justice Committee noted in its analysis, quote, that this should, quote, allow for an order of non-disclosure for first-time low-level DWIs, no DWIs with a BAC of 0.15 or above. The House digest on the statute stated very similarly, quote, allow a person convicted of driving under the influence with a blood alcohol concentration less than 0.15 to
convicted.
Petition for an order.
The word convicted, that didn't happen here. He was not convicted of a Class A. He was convicted of a Class B with some evidentiary indications that he was eligible for a Class A, but the prosecution exercises discretion to agree to a conviction of Class B.
Yes, however, the fact that the .16 is there, and in other cases may be there as well, is still present. That does seem to be something that the legislature has focused on in other areas. For example, the ignition interlock device that was required for the appellant in this case, it uses very similar language that it's shown shown the evidence that it was 0.15 or higher at the time of the analysis, and that is not tied to a conviction at the time either.
Do you disagree with counsel's argument that, in fact, that type of requirement for probation for a Class B is eligible with regard to the trial court's discretion?
Yes, it is discretionary for other offenses. However, the legislature, in making these statutes, has shown a clear intent to treat DWIs with a BAC of 0.15 or higher differently. And unfortunately, like, this case is not, the record in this case is not as good as we would like it to be. However, it does still have that 0.16, and therefore it meets the legislature's intent in those regards. Justice Massengale, you pointed out, there is still the underlying issue of whether or not this is in the best interest of justice, and considering the legislative intent that I just discussed, the trial court did not abuse its discretion, and that is a discretionary call on the trial court of whether or not it is in the best interest of justice. Justice Birdwell, you did ask whether there were any things that we were supposed to look at, and its guiding principles or rules and legislative history and legislative intent can be that, and I think that the trial court was within its discretion.
But if the trial court read the statute incorrectly, and in fact RS could obtain the sealing of this record because he was convicted of a Class B, then presumably the court might have then said something else about best interest. In other words, if the trial court misunderstood the statute, would that not drive the secondary finding as well?
I don't think,
in all likelihood.
Sorry for interrupting you. I don't think that we can say that, given that it is just this brief statement, and it is an abuse of discretion standard. So we kind of are stuck and locked with what we have. So we don't know exactly why that best interest determination was made. And given the record that we do have, I think that it was not an abuse of discretion for the trial court to make that finding. So in conclusion, the plain language of the statute and specifically the legislative intent behind this statute support the conclusion that orders of nondisclosure are not available for those convicted of DWIs when it is shown that the BAC is 0.15 or higher at the time of the offense, which is the case in this case. And therefore, the state asks the court to affirm the trial court's order.
Before you sit down, are you aware, are there any other pending cases in this court that present the same interpretive question about this statute?
Not that I'm aware of.
Thank you.
Rebuttal, Mr. Begley.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the court. I would like to address a few issues that were brought up on state's argument. Nowhere in this statute, and when I say this statute, I mean 411.0736, does it state that those with a blood alcohol content of greater than 0.15 are not alleged to be greater than 0.15 are not eligible for nondisclosure. That would be a simple answer to this question. What it states is that those with convictions other than those punishable under a statute, which when looked at requires that it be proven that a BAC was 0.15 or higher, are eligible for this. And when you take that entire context into it, when you look at the fact that, as stated by Justice Birdwell, in the sponsored statement of intent from the committee reports on this bill, it is stated that it's a bill whereby individuals convicted of one low-level offense, open parenthesis, driving while intoxicated, close parenthesis, under 0.15 at blood alcohol level, are entitled to these nondisclosures.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Let me just ask you, do you think the statute is ambiguous?
I don't believe it is, actually, Your Honor.
I only ask because generally you would only resort to these types of legislative history arguments once you had first concluded that the statute was ambiguous.
I believe it's just offering support, but I believe that when you look at subsection D of Texas Penal Code 4904 that states punishable, when they're referring to using the punishable language in the government code statute, where it states that it has to be shown at trial, the blood alcohol content or blood level being at or above a 0.15, that takes care of the question of ambiguity.
Do you agree that with Justice Massengale that there, it is a two-part showing with regard to this petition? One is he has to show eligibility with regard to the class-level misdemeanor involved in the DUI, and two, that even if he shows that the conviction makes him eligible for having this conviction and history sealed, you still have to demonstrate that sealing it would be in the best interest.
I believe it's not a, it shouldn't be interpreted as a two-prong test. I believe it should be interpreted as eligibility being the first hurdle that we get over, and then it goes to the discretion of the trial court with the possibility to argue whether or not it's in the best interest of justice.
Okay, so what in your pleadings, in your petition, did you argue that why it was in the best interest? In other words, you clearly argued that he was eligible for it in your petition. What in your petition was there to be said that it was in the best interest, or did you just simply conclusorily say this would be in the best interest?
It was not addressed, Your Honor, as in the, unfortunately not on the record, hearing that we had on this topic, that this was the sole issue, and it was understood that if this was to be appealed and come back on it, that it would be discussed further down there, down the line. I cannot attest to the judge's reasoning regarding the finding of the interest of justice in the trial court's findings and conclusions because it's not elaborated upon at all. It's just the single line there. It was not addressed in our pleadings because the sole issue, as we spoke to the trial judge about it, and as it understood to be, would be the application or the eligibility due to whether it's a .15 or a conviction under a Class B.
Well, the judge did take care to... You know, this is not a simple one-line order denying the relief you requested. The judge took care to set out fact findings and then explained the legal analysis and then stated conclusions. And there's a distinct conclusion that an order of non-disclosure would not be in the best interest of justice under the facts of this offense. And so... I understand this is somewhat new ground we're plowing, but wouldn't we ordinarily review such a finding for the sufficiency of the evidence if the record supports the factual findings that are stated in this order, and if those factual findings support a conclusion that an order of non-disclosure would not be in the best interest of justice under the facts of the offense? Wouldn't the ordinary standard of review suggest that is a finding that would be affirmed?
If I may answer in two parts, Your Honor, I believe first, like I said, that we have to, before the interpretation of whether or not this is in the best interest of justice is reached, we have to look at whether or not this qualifies. And when you look to the particular, part two of that answer, the particular findings in this, as you mentioned, there are facts, there's legal analysis, and there are the conclusions. The majority of the conclusions and the vast majority of the findings of fact and the analysis apply almost entirely to the blood alcohol content as originally alleged in the information of this case and the subsequent pleading to the lesser included charge, which is why I believe that remains the primary and single issue we should be looking at here. Unless there's any more questions.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you all.
Your case is submitted, and we do have two cases on our 10:30 docket, and we will take a break until then.